Thanks, Gillian. Those who come regularly will be aware that we're in the middle of a series on the Ten Commandments. We're following the order that was put together by a chap called J. John, who did a credible preaching tour around the country, going to numbers of different cities, and for 10 weeks running would preach on one of the Ten Commandments. And he did sort of three or four cities at a time, so he was rushing around night after night. And he broke the Ten Commandments down into a slightly different order. Moses obviously got it wrong, I think, on the mountain. As he scribbled on the stone, he should have got it in another order, according to J. John. But anyway, tonight we're looking at, well, he called it, keep the peace with your parents. The Ten Commandments say, children, honour your father and mother. You've got every right, I think, to say, just a minute, you're a retired accountant, never had a wife, let alone any children. The vicar's obviously decided it's best to go to Claygate tonight and speak rather than hear this inexperienced guy talk about parents and children. What are my qualifications? Well, I'm a great observer of families. I'm very privileged to be included in. Many families will say, well, we count Glyn as one of the family, which is a wonderful privilege. So whereas most of you are only in one family, I actually could count a number that I was part of. And I watch very carefully what happens. I'm a shop steward for Children's Rights. The Tooth Fairy has cost quite a bit of money over the years. As I inquire of children how much the Tooth Fairy leaves, and whatever amount they say, I express horror and indignation that that's all it is, with parents in the background frantically saying, cool it down, cool it down. Some very good friends of mine, the wife is still called by her family, and she even addresses herself as the Ayatollah, because many years ago I was with them in North Wales on holiday. Their three children were 10, 11, 12, 13, that sort of age. And mother was going bananas, rushing around, waving mops and dusters and shouting at the state of rooms. And so she's getting really quite carried away. And so I took the three children outside the front door, and she realised they'd all disappeared when they should, in fact, have been tidying their rooms, and came rushing out. And as she came out, we all stood like that. And she just, bless her, burst out laughing. And ever since, her children, who are now 40, still call her the Ayatollah, and she calls herself exactly the same. So I've had lots of experience of dealing with children and families. So there you go. I've got a bit of a right to speak on this subject. Let's just pray before we start. Heavenly Father, thank you that those commands were given to Moses those years ago. Thank you that as we look at them today, they're perfect. They sum up what's needed to live in a community. They sum up the need for us to have a relationship with you. Father, thank you, and be with us tonight as we look. The family is a gift from God, and I see that so many times. It is wonderful, and so much of life revolves around what happens with a family. I constantly am aware of this, even business situations, relationships. You realise that, in fact, if you bring it back to the base, it's the same relationships within a family. One of the great joys I have, though I'm sure it's frustrating for parents, is to see children playing mum and dad off against each other. Oh, but mum, dad said, and mum grits her teeth, and when the children go to bed, wires into dad, and then vice versa. And that's what life's all about. Life is a long negotiation. We spend so much of our time in many ways negotiating, and children in that stable environment learn how to do it. It's a wonderful situation, and I love it. I love it. Relationships get taught. I'm a Macaulay. I'm the son of Frank and Mary, and I always will be, always have been. Within a family, it's a permanent relationship. We're going to talk a bit about that in a few minutes' time. It isn't one that we can opt in and out of. This command, as Gillian just read, is the first one, though we could start debating that, that has a promise attached to it. The promise that honour your parents, that you will live long. Quite what that means, commentators come up with different views. We're not going to discuss them tonight. It's a command that mentions both parents, men and women, father and mother. And that doesn't get a lot of note in the Old Testament. The role of the women tends to be rather pushed aside. But here, within this family situation, mother and father. And so much is relevant today. J. John in his book says 50% of children are now born out of wedlock. By the age of 16, one in four children have experienced separation. And certainly the 10-year-old son of some folk that I know well said to mother, "Are you and dad going to get divorced?" And they were, but they were trying to just balance it and weren't sure how to tell the children. But Adam said to Joe, "Are you going to get divorced?" She was taken aback and said, "Yes." It was no surprise to him at all, because so many children within his class, parents had divorced. He knew all about divorce. He was able to tell her, whereas she was terrified of how she was going to break it to him. We have prenuptial agreements. We have maintenance agreements. We have access agreements. We've got long and erratic work hours. One of the problems with the fire brigade at the moment as these strikes are taking place is to do with the hours. It's to do with the fact that the firemen say we will have less time with our families. We talk about the erosion of childhood, and that's a terrible phrase, erosion of childhood. The delight of children growing up have been and are being eroded. And of course, technology takes away the social atmosphere within a home so easily, doesn't it? As we get onto the computer games and all the rest of it, that the scope for actually engaging as a family, as that core, which is what God intended. One other thing before we look at the particular verse. It intrigues me, I've said this before, that if I were going to write the Bible, if I were going to imagine and make something up, as people say about the Bible, this whole Christian thing isn't real, it's been invented. The last thing you would do would be to put a whole lot of warts and all stout type stuff in the book that you were writing. And yet when I look at biblical examples of family life, the very first family, Adam and Eve, sons, Cain and Abel. What happened? Cain killed Abel. A little further down the line, Jacob, one of the great men of the Old Testament, had 12 sons by 4 different mothers. He lied to get his birthright. Do you remember? He was the younger of the two brothers. Esau was the elder one. And Jacob and his mother sort of dressed him up with some hairy animal skin so that blind dad wouldn't realize which son it was, and he got the birthright. It was a dysfunctional family. One of his children was Joseph. He favored Joseph. The other brothers, needless to say, were very jealous. A family that just didn't work, and yet here it is, all set out in the Bible. Joseph had his dream and said to his brothers, "You're going to bow down before me." Well, that went down well with the brothers, needless to say. It's all recorded here in the Bible. To me, it's wonderful that the Bible comes across. Here is the truth of a situation which you may not like at all. The brothers lied to Jacob. And then finally, Reuben, one of the sons, actually slept with one of Jacob's wives. An incredibly dysfunctional family. And finally, you as parents will identify here a bit easier than I might, but Jesus himself, you know, bless him, the family went down from Nazareth to Jerusalem for the Passover. It's about an hour by road nowadays on decent roads, so it would have been a fair-sized trek in those days on donkeys and walking. When they'd finished the Passover, they start going back. There's the sort of caravan, as they called it. I don't know how many people were in it, many people, back up to Nazareth. Parents wouldn't bother too much, I guess, about the children. The children would have sleepovers with people somewhere down the other end of the caravan trail. But after a day or so, Mary and Joseph thought, what's happened to our 12-year-old lad, Jesus? We haven't seen him. We'd better look. Looked for a day, couldn't find him, finished up going back to Jerusalem and found him there with the teachers, the priests in the temple. And in Luke chapter 28, just let me read what actually took place. It's Luke 28 and in the 40s. Oops, wrong one. It's my handwriting. I knew it couldn't be Luke 28. It's near the beginning of his life. It's Luke chapter 2. And Jesus said to them, well, they said to him, Son, why have you treated us like this? Your father and I have been anxiously searching for you. Does that ring any bells with parents? Why were you searching for me, he asked. Didn't you know I had to be in my father's house? But they did not understand what he was saying to them. Not a dysfunctional family, but an extremely unusual event that Jesus himself must have caused quite a bit of grief to his parents. Anyway, let's look at Ephesians chapter 6. I've chosen that passage because it's the emphasis is there on parents' relationship with children as well as children with parents. And I suspected there wouldn't be a lot of children here tonight that one might address as children, though we're all children, and we'll come onto that again in a moment. And Ephesians 6 verse 4 says, parents, do not exasperate or provoke your children. Colossians chapter 3, which is a very similar letter Paul wrote to the Colossians as he wrote to the church at Ephesus, says, do not embitter your children, do not abuse power, or children will be discouraged and lose heart. I like that. Do not embitter, do not abuse power, or children will be discouraged and they will lose heart. This was in the Daily Telegraph last week. Capello, the England football manager, lack of respect ends hope of reconciliation. Another of the alarmist stories about the English football team. I put that up on the screen because I think one of the most noticeable things about a family is where you have got respect earned by parents with their children. Remember, God is our father, and I feel for many children when you see the human father that they have, that's all they know about fatherhood. And then we talk about the Bible, about God our Father, Abba, Daddy, Father. I love it when a child throws their arms around Dad's neck and says, Dad's old. Dad may well be pretty useless at whatever it was and had failed to repair the bicycle or whatever it was, but Dad is the best dad in the world. That love, that respect that a child has for a parent, something that needs to be earned. Parents who want more for their children than they themselves had. I'd love my father to be alive now to say thank you to him. I didn't hood what he and my mother sacrificed for my brother and I. Didn't have days. Absolutely scrimped to make sure we had a decent education. It was nice in their latter years to be able to give them a few treats, but I'd love now to say thank you. Thank you for being determined that I and my brother were going to have a better life, a fuller life than they had. That, I believe, is what God would have of us. Parents, earn the respect of your children. Let's just go through a number of I've written in my notes here, tips. My daughter won't tell me anything, and I'm a nervous wreck. That ring any bells? My daughter tells me everything, and I'm a nervous wreck. The problem of bringing up children, there's an element of it being an impossible task. If you want to adopt a child, the paperwork is phenomenal, I gather. But if it's a natural birth, there's no paperwork apart from a birth certificate and registry office or whatever. That's it. That's it. We need to surround our relationship with our children. There was a bit of a storm a few years ago in the evangelical wing of the Anglican Church because, in fact, not just the Anglican Church, the church, because a chap called Professor Norman Anderson, who lost all of his children during his lifetime. It was one of those tragedies. And he said, I still pray every day for every one of my children. And the thought of praying for dead people was not encouraged. And Norman Anderson said, I prayed every day for each of my children for the whole of their life. And I'm not going to thank God for my children. I'm not praying that their salvation might be amended in any way. They're dead. They've gone to be with him. That's it. But I'm still going to thank God. I've done it every day for the whole of my life. And I'm going to carry on. Let's surround our children in prayer. The Bible says, train and instruct in the Lord. That fourth verse of the Ephesian chapter that Gillian read to us. Yeah, bedtime prayers, yes, great, just to have that little time with children. But what they need to see is the fruit of the Spirit demonstrated in the life of mum and dad. In the chapter immediately before the one that we had read to us tonight, in Ephesians chapter 5, it talks about nourishing. I like that word, nourish. Parents have a responsibility to train, to instruct, to nourish their children. And what a tragedy it is when we hear people, poor child, have. The background, the home, the whole environment, what chance did they have? Be fair. Well, that's the protest that you get from the children every day, isn't it? But it's important. Look what a mess Jacob made with his family by having that younger son, Joseph, and being very clearly the teacher's favourite. Joseph was the one that Jacob loved, and he made it clear to us. Communicate. A few lines from the J. John book. This is the book that we're using for our little sermon series on the Ten Commandments. This is what J. John says. A 16-year-old daughter went into the front room and asked the assembled family members, has anyone seen my new jumper? Her dad replied, you mean the one that costs £50? Her gran replied, you mean that one with the low neckline? Her mother replied, oh, you mean the one that has to be washed by hand in cold water? Her brother replied, the stupid one that makes you look fat. Her sister replied, you mean the one that won't let me, you mean the one that you won't let me borrow. Everyone was talking about the same jumper, says J. John, but no one answered her question. There were many words said, but no communication took place. Interesting thought, isn't it? No communication took place. In the book, J. John also says that the average father spends 38 seconds daily in face-to-face conversation with a child. Face-to-face, not with them, but face-to-face, 38 seconds. How that research was done, I've no idea. And it does mean that when dad says to child, I want to talk to you, we know full well what I want to talk to you means. It's bad news coming up. Communication with children. Apologize. One of the things I remember so clearly was a mother with a son, 10 or 11, I suppose Siggy was at the time, And he was the issue was trivial. But my goodness, he dug in and she dug in, and the two of them were nose to nose. And in the end, Sally actually, well, she pushed him rather than hit him. It was the sort of push that would be nothing compared to what would be dished out in the playground. But as soon as she'd done it, she burst into tears, threw her arms round him and said, "Siggy, I'm sorry, I should not have hit you." And he put his arm to it. That happened. I stood in the kitchen up in Glasgow and I watched it happen. But it taught me a lesson. Apologise. And parents, to apologise to children, it's fine, I'm standing here with no children. but the need to say sorry when you're wrong is a great lesson in life. It's a great lesson. None of us are keen on apologising in any circumstances. But sorry when child knows. In that case, Sig knew. He knew that for Mum just to put a hand on him was wrong. It wasn't a wallop on the bottom, having considered a situation. It was just a little that they did. Forgive. We live within the family. We're going to see them tomorrow, the day after, and the day after that. We need to forgive. Two of my cousins haven't spoken for years now because there was some squabble. One of their parents' state of health, I don't know what it was all about, but they still, I see them once a year, and they still are in the same room, opposite sides of the room. They haven't got round to being able to forgive. The need for parents to forgive, whatever the situation today. Release. It must be one of the worst moments in life, I would suspect, when a parent sees the child wobbling down the road on their first bicycle ride. I've seen it happen a few times. It's great fun to watch it, but I guess if you're mum and see this... I remember a family over in Banstead, the Barlow family. They had a son, two daughters, and their home was the home where the whole of the youth groups all seemed to gather. Don't know why, it just happened that way. everyone gathered around there. Dad sat in the corner looking out of the window, puffing his pipe with a painting in front of him. He was painting whatever the activity in the garden was. Mum was behind, stacking up the fridge, which seemed to be getting emptied the whole time. And she said to me one evening, "You know, Glyn, I threw my children out of the nest as soon as I could." And I saw exactly what it... There wasn't a sense of frustration. She tried to kid on, it was, but she was chuffed about it, and so she ought to be. I released my children as early as I could, but I'm coming home. A lovely Christian home. It was great. And finally... last but not least, I guess, discipline. We've got in Proverbs, spare the rod and spoil the child. But we need an apple as well. We need a thank you. We need a carrot as well as a stick. We need to encourage and not provoke. We know Hebrews says quite clearly, the Lord disciplines those. Let's move on to the last bit, which is really what this... subject's all about, children and parents. Honour. That's a word that's tossed around a lot, isn't it? His honour, judge so-and-so. The right honourable member for Kingston and Richmond Park, or whatever it might be, that one hears in Parliament. The word honour. Children, honour your parents, says the commandment. Honour your parents, obey your parents. Respect, obey, reverence, maintenance. We'll come on to that in a moment, because that's the area that I think those of us sitting in the room here tonight are more involved in as children. Honouring parents, it's a great thing. As I said earlier on, where a child says what the dad, best dad in the world. Honour our parents. A few things that J. John's mentioned and things that I've put together. Affirm parents. We all like to be appreciated. I couldn't go on the church weekend because I was at a wedding. And I got a thank you card for the whatever it was I sent them. Beautiful pots and pans. So they'll think of me daily as they use the pots and pans. But just listen to this, and I don't say this for my own, well, I do to an extent, my own gratification, but it's the sort of thing we need to think about as people, whatever our role might be. Thank you, Glyn, says Caroline, but mostly for your friendship to our family, your generosity and your fun. You are very precious. Underlined. And I've kept that. I got it a few months ago, but it didn't get... I kept it, and I thought I'd read it to you tonight. Thank you for the pots and pans, but thank you for you. You're very precious to us. Love, Caroline. Affirm parents. Proverbs has a lot to say. Proverbs 23, a lot in the Proverbs 20s about this relationship. Appreciate our parents. Again, Proverbs chapter 4, verse 20. There's Mother's Day, those sort of things, which are an appreciation of parents. And children are wise, I think, to acknowledge them. Care for. Jesus on the cross. Some of the last words we have coming in John chapter 19, if I can get the right one this time. John 19 and verses 26, 27. Jesus on the cross says this. When Jesus saw his mother standing there and this disciple whom he loved standing nearby, he said to his mother, "Dear woman, here is your son." And to the disciple, "Here is your mother." From that time on, this disciple took her into his home, looking after them. 1 Timothy, Paul writing to Timothy, 1 Timothy 5:4 says, "Learn first of all to put religion into practice by caring for your own family." Look after them. And many of us now, it's the age that we are, and we go through life, the helpless baby, being looked after by parents, being educated and nurtured by them. Then we're on that equal sort of footing for many years, and then it swings the other way. As parents need our help and our care, give it. And finally, act now. I think if one were to speak to Simon or others who take funerals, they would say all too frequently, the if or a funeral, if only I'd had the time just to say thank you, if only I'd had the time to apologise, if only that relationship that was fractured, if only. Act now. Act now. If there's a broken relationship, act now to put it right. This is the only commandment, when you think about it, that isn't cover, don't commit adultery. That's true for the whole of your life, birth to death. But this particular one, in most cases, doesn't last for the whole of life. It only lasts for your parents' life. You, in middle age, 60 or whatever you may be, when they pass on, it's a commandment that only lasts for part of our life. It's one that we need to be careful of. It's one where we need to ensure that nothing to do with family, but when I told a good friend of mine that I was speaking on this subject, he immediately said, "Glyn, make sure whatever you do, that you refer not only to real parents, but for parents who are adopted parents." And he mentioned in his particular case a man, a great man of God, chap who was the principal, I think, of the Ealing Bible College. He walked my man, Peter would know him, who's now frail. He's up in the northwest and can't get around and badly needs an adapted car. And they pray. Heavenly Father, thank you for this command. Thank you for all that we find in the Bible, whether we're here as parents or certainly here as children. Lord, challenge us in our relationships.